Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we talk to Jody Stauber from the Yellow Ribbon community of Duluth, and we take a first-hand look at the Nuremberg War Trials with World War II veteran Larry Tillmans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
One of Minnesota's National Guard's most important missions is to assist local communities in fighting spring flooding in multiple locations around the state. Last year, this effort included more than 300 Minnesota National Guard personnel, as well as equipment including Black Hawk and Chinook helicopters from our Combat Aviation Brigade. This year, we are preparing for possible record flooding throughout Minnesota. Over the last month, I have accompanied Governor Dayton, Homeland Security and Emergency Management Director Chris Eide, and other commissioners to the Minnesota communities of Crookston, Moorhead, South St. Paul, Stillwater, Jordan, Montevideo, Winona, and Mankato to discuss how the Guard is preparing for spring flooding in order to support the Governor and the Director of Emergency Management. As I met with community leaders, I emphasized three things. First, the Minnesota National Guard has the necessary resources to support civil authorities during flood fight operations. Our organization brings special capabilities that can assist civil authorities, whether it's in personnel or in equipment. Next, the Minnesota National Guard is not in charge. We are assisting the civil authorities responsible for the state's emergency management plan. And finally, even with upcoming military deployments, the Minnesota National Guard has more than 12,000 soldiers and airmen available in the state to assist with flood fight operations. In terms of daily operations during spring flooding, there are a number of tasks that are usually taken up by our forces throughout the state. These include, but are not limited to, maintaining quick reaction force teams that conduct citizen evacuations and respond to levee breaches, monitoring, securing, and refueling of pumps, route reconnaissance on major roads affected by flooding, traffic control, state-of-the-art communication support, and air and ground movement support. The Minnesota National Guard is comfortable in what we call the new normal, a time of increased deployments and increased challenges and demands on our force. I include in that our yearly flood fight operations, one of our major contributions to the state and community.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, Jody Stauber joins us. She is a retired Command Chief Master Sergeant of the Minnesota National Guard's Duluth-based 148th Fighter Wing, and she also is a founding member of the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth. Ms. Stauber, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you.
Can you tell me how many years did it take you to become the Command Chief Master Sergeant of the Minnesota National Guard's Duluth-based 148th Fire Wing?
Well, it did take a few years, I can say that. I retired this past year with just under 24 years of service.
My goodness, good work.
Thank you.
And I understand that you were the first woman to hold that most senior enlisted position at that unit.
That's right, yep. Actually, in the state of Minnesota, I think I was the first woman to be a Command Chief in the state, and I can tell you it was a wonderful, wonderful job. I really, really loved it. I have a heart for taking care of airmen, and that was what that position was all about.
That's quite an honor. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I understand that the last year that you were in the Guard, you spent most of it deployed.
I deployed to Baghdad, Iraq, that's right, in 2009, and that was quite an experience. I deployed as a single deployer. You know, often military members gear up together, and they go off in a group and to deploy location and spend that time there together, whereas I was an individual deployer. So I left my home by myself and went by myself and came back by myself and joined up with another unit while I was there.
You and I have talked about this before, Jody, but you're married with four children.
That's right.
And you were telling me a story about that last moment that you said goodbye to your children at the airport. Can you share that with us again?
Sure. Yeah, that was... Have you ever ripped off a Band-Aid really, really slowly? That's what that felt like, that whole entire day. my husband Pete and I talked about whether we should bring our kids to the airport or not. They're young at the time. They were 8, 7, 6, and 2. And, you know, we thought, would it be too much for them? Should we leave them at home and spare them, or should they come? And we just came back to the point that, you know, we're a military family, and our kids are part of this process. They need to be there, and they need to experience this, even though it's going to be painful. And painful it was. So we brought them. And as an individual deployer, I just had my, you know, immediate family and friends around me, and it was pretty obvious to everyone else what was going on, you know, all the other passengers. So they had their eyes on us, you know, all of that time while we were waiting, and so that was kind of strange. But, you know, one of my friends said, Jody, you're doing so well while we're at the airport, and I just said to her, you know, I'm already gone. It was so hard. It was so painful. It was really hard for me to look at my kids, to see them at those moments before I had to board the airplane, because you want that moment to be over. You want to get on with it. As much as you don't want to leave, you know you have to. And for my husband and I, we told the kids and each other that the moment that I step away from the family and turn my back is going to be a very important moment, because that's when the clock finally will start ticking. You spend all this time preparing for deployment, but those moments don't count. It's the moment you turn around and you take your first step away. And then every tick of the clock counts, and that's one tick sooner you'll be back home with your family. So we had that moment, and you know, my third son has Down syndrome. He was 6 at the time, and he doesn't understand time, place, and distance, and he doesn't know where Iraq is, and he doesn't know what this means. And my 2-year-old is much in the same boat at that time, and all they knew was something really upsetting was happening. You know, they could tell I was leaving, and it was getting pretty emotional. And the TSA agents were crying even. They had to swap out people from the back to the front because they couldn't take it either. And we were trying to keep it under control, but it was a sad moment. And my little boy with Down syndrome came running after me down the security gate there, and you know, he just didn't want to let me go, and it was very painful. But we parted. We ripped off that Band-Aid finally, and I got on the airplane and sobbed. And can't imagine not being hugged and holding my family, you know, for such an extended period of time. How does a person survive without that? I wasn't sure even at that moment. So I gave myself until the flight attendant was going to bring me my drink, and I told myself I can sob until then, and then I got to pull myself up by the bootstraps and get on with it, and I can't cry forever. And my husband took the kids, and he took them to a place where we always see the airplanes flying near where we live, and he took the kids to that spot there by the airport, by the runway, and he sat with them there, and they did their crying, and they saw the airplane. And my one little son said, Mom, I wanted to shoot up that airplane and lasso the airplane and pull it back down because I didn't want you to leave, and it was very painful. But, you know, looking back, Tom, it was the right thing to do, because our family serves together, and we have to feel that together. And my kids are very proud of my deployment, and they are proud that they served their country as well.
It really demonstrates the sacrifices that our troops make when mom has to leave her husband and 4 children at home and become the chief master sergeant and go back to work for a year.
Right, and they don't, you know, the average person doesn't realize, you know, you don't think about those moments and how hard those are and how taxing they are on the kids and the toll it takes. You know, that forever changing, that was a life-changing moment for our family and our kids. And I believe now for the better, but, you know, the hard things sometimes are for the better, but they're still hard.
Jody, we have to take a short break, and we'll continue our conversation right after the short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're talking with retired Command Chief Master Sergeant Jody Stauber, who is also a founding member of the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth. Jody, when you were gone on that last deployment, how did your husband manage the tasks of a full-time job raising the kids and taking care of the family?
You know, Tom, I still ask myself that question. Our kids were so little when we left. You know, they were 8, 7, 6, and 2, like I mentioned, and my husband has a leadership role in the job that he does with the police department where we live. So he had a very taxing position, a job that he needed to stay on top of, and then 4 kids to get to activities and their schooling and all of that. How did he do that? We still talk about that to this day. And, you know, there's a few people that really stood up to help. And one thing I will say about that, too, Tom, is that there are a lot of people that promise you the world. They'll promise you, if you need anything, give me a call. But there are so few that actually show up to help.
But they're very important, aren't they?
They are so important. Those few that show up to help are really important. I had some great friends who cooked some meals for my husband and the family while I was gone. You know, a couple times, a few times a week, they would show up at the doorstep when Pete would get home from work, and they'd have hot meals ready for the kids. What a godsend. I was so concerned the kids would live on fast food the whole time. My husband's not really much of a cook, and not to mention he's so busy. So to have those meals, to have good home-cooked meals, was really a godsend. The other moment that sticks in my mind, I called home one night to check in on everybody, and Pete said, "Jody, you won't believe what happened today." I said, "What?" He said, "I came home from work, I come around the corner, and our lawn was mowed." He was near tears when he was telling me. Now, this might not seem like that big of a deal to the average person, but think about it for just a moment from the perspective of a single parent at home with four kids. You come home from work, all the tasks you have to do of bathing and cleaning, cooking, taking care of those kids, and then to mow the lawn on top of it, and you can't leave four kids unattended. As soon as they see Dad on the lawnmower and disengage from the family, there's trouble that's going to happen, let's face it. So to have that taken off his plate was a godsend. He was near tears telling me about it. And then you know what happened the next week, Tom? That person came back again and mowed the lawn. Again and again and again. Every week, someone came from Master Lawn Care, from a local business here that heard that I was deployed, and helped my husband by mowing the lawn.
That's fantastic.
That it was more than you can imagine.
Now, I'm guessing, and I'm pretty sure I'm right on this, that that last deployment and all of the work that your husband went through had something to do with you volunteering to be a founding member of the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth.
That, you know, my deployment, our experience with the family, really propelled us both to be involved. My husband is also on that committee. He's already a patriot to begin with. He was already a big supporter of my deployment, but after what he went through, he was so proud himself for making it, for doing it, for making it happen, and for a good reason. So he wanted to be involved as well. So, you know, I was not the only person by any stretch. There were other people that were far more instrumental in getting Duluth to be a Yellow Ribbon community. So that happened this past year as well. They're proclaimed a Yellow Ribbon community.
And how great it is that you and your husband are giving back to the other military members now.
Yes.
Can you tell us, give us some stories of how the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth is helping our military families?
Well, sure. The Yellow Ribbon Community has formed different committees as part of that to reach out in the community. There's such communities such as the Education Committee, the Law Enforcement Committee, the Spiritual Committee, and then Community Resources. There's tons of committees, on top of as part of this commitment, and so they are all brainstorming ways in which they can reach out. For instance, at the Education Committee, think about all the kids, really are pretty few when you look in the school systems, that have parents deployed or affected by deployment. They're out there, but it's not necessarily every kid in every class. So those kids can feel isolated among their own peer group. They're going through things, they're scared, they're lonely, they're frustrated. How do we educate the teachers and the counselors in the school systems to understand deployment better, to help reach out to these kids, to recognize signs and symptoms, and to be aware that those children are going through some pretty tough things that the kid next to them isn't today? So that's one example of reaching out and educating and helping.
It's got to be helpful to the families that have members deployed. To know that a retired Command Chief Master Sergeant is also sitting on the committee for the Yellow Ribbon community.
Well, I hope so. I certainly have a much better understanding, and that was one of the reasons I volunteered to deploy, because as a Command Chief, I felt I really needed to understand what people were going through, and you don't know until you go through the process yourself. You don't know how heart-wrenching it is to be gone, and the loneliness that can just consume you when you're away from your family for extended periods of time, and how hard it is to come back. That was really a shock to me, because I had heard about reintegration issues, but I kind of thought, well, I'm sure people have reintegration issues, but I'm not going to have any, because I'm so excited to go home, and it's going to be like Disney all over again, and we're going to bake cookies, and it's going to be just so wonderful, isn't it? Was I ever shocked, Tom, to come home and find out that is not how it works? It's much more complicated than that.
And your family learned how to survive when you were gone for a year, didn't they?
Yes. I was actually only gone for 5 months.
Okay.
But yes, they had to survive without me. And there's mixed emotions about that too. You know, you walk back home and everything's fine. You're thinking, well, doesn't anyone need me here? But really, everyone wasn't fine. You know, my oldest son had a really hard time the whole time I was gone. I had several people tell me that he was not the same kid while I was gone. He was quiet. He was lonely. He was kind of angry. He wouldn't talk to me when I called home. This is my guy who's a steady Eddie. He's that kid that toes the line and does everything he's supposed to do, but he didn't know how to deal with all his emotions and his fears. When he'd hear on the radio or the news station that a soldier was kidnapped in Baghdad, and he knows his mother's there. He doesn't know who to talk to. He doesn't know how to express that. He's the oldest child. He's just consumed. You know, and that was a big eye-opener for me, too, is you never know how deployment's going to affect children. And that's why they need the most loving care and understanding and be spoken to about it and allow them to express their feelings and their fears.
For the families who have a loved one deployed, it's the little things that matter. You started saying the hot meal that showed up, the lawn that was mowed. I'm sure you've got your Yellow Ribbon community does a lot more things like shoveling snow and maybe just visiting with a single spouse to give them a little break.
That's right. And just calling them and telling them we're thinking about you goes a long way. You know, my husband, now that he's walked in those shoes, he has done the same thing for people he knows have deployed. He's called them on the holidays and said, hey, I know I'm just thinking about you and hoping that you guys are doing okay. And you know, we have somebody here thinking about you. And that goes a long way. You know, it helps a lot to know people are thinking about you.
What kind of response are you getting from the military families and the volunteers to the Yellow Ribbon Network in Duluth?
A really great response, but we could always use more people. It takes a lot of people to make things happen, so we are always looking for more volunteers and more exposure of the program, because when people know about it, hear about it, then they'll use it as well, and they'll come up with those better ideas, too, and come up with their stories on things that would have helped them while they were deployed or while they're going through that experience. So, you know, while we have great volunteers now, we always could use more and more exposure to the program.
So you need volunteers, and for our listeners who might be interested in joining their Yellow Ribbon community, where do they start?
They can start by going on the beyondtheyellowribbon.org website, and you can look for the communities that are Yellow Ribbon communities around Minnesota, and that's how they can start getting involved. It's a real, real easy step. Just check that website and look for your city. And if your city isn't listed, well, there you go. You can start one in your own community, and it'll tell you how to do that as well.
Jody, you're doing a great job. Thank you for forming that committee in Duluth.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
And thanks for joining us today.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
That was Jody Stauber, the founding member of the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth and a retired Command Master, Chief Master Sergeant of the Minnesota National Guard's Duluth-based 148th Fighter Wing. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. It was last year, and a North Metro Gold Star mom had had enough of the memories. Every room in her home reminded her of the son she'd lost 2 years before. She reached out for some help to prepare her home to be sold, but no one came. So she started tackling it on her own, but very quickly took a tumble and broke her ankle. Now she needed help and called on local church. Little did she know that the church was home to the Yellow Ribbon Network of Monomita. Quickly, a volunteer project manager was identified, and volunteers started coming. Over 2 weeks, they painted, fixed plumbing, replaced the window and even light fixtures, and applied new caulk around the tub. Even though they hadn't met the woman they were volunteering for, they knew she had lost her son. And each day they left, they felt more appreciated than the last. One day she did visit the volunteers and was so overwhelmed with gratitude, she couldn't express a word as tears fell down her cheeks. Thank you to the Yellow Ribbon community of Monomedi for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like the Yellow Ribbon community of Monomedi, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll take a firsthand look at the Nuremberg War Trials with Larry Tillmans. That's right here on Newstalk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
Yesterday, the community came together to honor men and women who fought in a secret war. This secret war happened in Laos during Vietnam. Not a secret anymore. It was again publicly acknowledged during the 61st anniversary of the Royal Lao Armed Forces Day in St. Paul. This event was a time to recognize and remember our fellow soldiers who gave their lives for the cause of freedom during Vietnam, including U.S. Special Forces, the CIA, the U.S. Air Force, Air America, Air Continental, the Royal Thai Army, and the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. These service members helped ensure the safety and security of countless American soldiers along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The Royal Lao Armed Forces worked closely with the U.S. from 1960 until 1975. During this time, many paid the supreme sacrifice in defense of the freedoms and liberties that we, as Americans and Minnesotans, enjoy every day. The sacrifices were great. The United States of America and the state of Minnesota owe a debt of gratitude to those in the Royal Lao Armed Forces who served honorably and bravely. Your service is not forgotten.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Larry Tillmans joins us. He is a World War II veteran and served as a clerk typist for General Patton's 3rd Army during the Nuremberg War Trials and at Dachau. Mr. Tillmans, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Sir, for some of our younger listeners that might not be familiar with them, can you explain to us what the Nuremberg War Trials were about?
Well, there were 24 of them on trial, and of those 24, 12 were convicted to hang. And the trial lasted about 218 trial days, and it lasted from November of 45 till November of 46. And in that period of time, there was 360 witnesses that came to Nuremberg and 200,000 affidavits. And that took a lot of typing and a lot of recording. And I was a clerk typist, so I had opportunity to represent 3rd Army in Dachau, which was in the zone of the United States Army, and then as well as Nuremberg, which was also in our zone.
So the Nuremberg War Trials were for trying criminals from the German hierarchy. Who were some of the men that were under trial?
Well, Rudolf Hess, but the one I remember the most, and I sat there for 3 days listening to his testimony, was Hermann Göring. Göring sat on the end of one row there, those 24, and he never seemed to look at anybody except his eyes were glowing all around the room. But I'll never forget the testimony that he gave. They all said that they were just obeying orders. They weren't guilty. And that's what he claimed. But he stepped off of the chair and he pointed to the ground that now right underneath here, America, you're the ones that bombed these people. You can smell the death and all of this smell and odor underneath this soil. And you did it, America. And he ranted and raved for about 3 days like that. And then Jackson, I got to remember, was it Robert Jackson? Yeah, the chief counselor for the four countries took him to task after his 3 days. And then Jackson had proved everything that Göring said to nothing but a lie. And Göring never recognized. He just kept looking around and looking around. And I'll never forget how he demonstrated during that time. They all had as much time as they wanted to plead their case.
And Mr. Tillman, these 200,000 affidavits that you helped type up, what type of evidence was presented against these men?
Well, anybody that testified had pretty much had an affidavit to write. And a lot of those affidavits, I'll never forget some of them, were by soldiers that had gone into Dachau, as example, 42nd, 45th Division, liberated Dachau, didn't even know there was concentration camps. But on that testimony that was given by some of them, there were 39 railroad cars on a siding. that had been brought into Dachau, and it had 2,310 bodies in it, and those were all dead. And they took those bodies out, and these guys, the capos and the prison guards, lined them all up toward the crematorium to burn, and there wasn't any fuel left to burn. Now, that was April 29. The war was shortly over then. But a lot of the reason it closed was there was no way they could get energy. They'd bombed out all of the railroad tracks, railroads, the highways. There was no way they could bring in coal or bring in wood or anything to operate on. So they, I think that's part of what the reason to surrender was.
We're speaking with Larry Tillmans, a World War II veteran who served as a typist during the Nuremberg War Trials. You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Tillmans, I asked you this earlier. What would you say to the president of Iran when he says that the whole idea of the concentration camps was made up?
Yeah, isn't that terrible? I mean, what does he think that 360 witnesses, 200,000 affidavits from these people that had encountered that 10,750,000 men, women, and children died in those camps, and they can verify that. And you sit there and you look at those guys and claim they were just taking orders. There was only one guy, Albert Speer, stood up and said when he was to talk on it that, no, we didn't just take orders, we could give orders. And he claimed that this fact that they had to obey everything was wrong. He determined who and where they were going to the different camps. He had a big responsibility. He got 20 years.
Was there any doubt in your mind after these trials that these gentlemen were guilty of some terrible crimes?
Terrible crimes, terrible things that they did to those people. If you took a period of 3 years, 42 to 45, there were 9,000 deaths per day. 9,000 deaths per day. Suppose in your paper would record 9,000 died today in these camps. 9,000 died today the next day, and the next day went on and on. Nothing but death was what was told.
Day after day after day.
Yeah.
Mr. Tillmans, we have to take a short break. But we'll be right back in a few minutes. Please stay with us. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. We're talking to Larry Tillmans, a World War II veteran who served as a clerk typist for the U.S. Army during the Nuremberg War Trials. Now imagine, it's 1945, World War II has just ended. You're a young sergeant in the Army, and you're a clerk typist, and you're assigned to the Nuremberg War Trials to try war criminals that committed some of the worst atrocities in the history of mankind during the Holocaust. Mr. Tillmans was there in Nuremberg from February 46 to November 46. He was stationed with Patton's Army, the 3rd Army headquarters, and he was involved in these war trials, deciphering some of the 200,000 affidavits concerning individual Nazi perpetrators such as Hermann Goering, Rudolf Hess, and Albert Speer. Mr. Tillmans, as a young man sitting there helping with these trials, what did it feel like to look these men in the face?
It was an eerie feeling. I'd never even been in a courthouse. I'd never even been to court. The only time I was in the courthouse was on a driver's license, and then all of a sudden you get an orientation of what you're going to see and what you're going to do, and then you walk in there and you look at 24 of them sitting in those chairs, and you're thinking, my gosh, 10,700,000 men, women, and children were put to death in here, not only in the gas chambers, but many died of starvation, and these are the guys that saying they were just obeying orders. Yeah, it was an eerie feeling, and one that I saw, and I feel it has to be repeated and repeated and repeated, just like Eisenhower told the soldiers, get it all out now, because somewhere down the line somebody's going to say it's nothing, never happened, and that some people are believing that today.
And how long did that trial go on, and how many days did you have to look at those men?
Well, the actual trial went from November 45 to November 46, 218 trial days. That was Nuremberg. And 360 witnesses, 400, well, there was 200,000 affidavits that were supporting the evidence that was there. So that was every day was another one of them telling more lies that they were just obeying.
Sir, you were there for a long time, and you typed thousands of pages of affidavits, and you heard all of the evidence. Did it affect you as a man? Did it affect you as a person sitting through that?
Well, I drank too much when I was in the Army, I know that. And I'm an alcoholic, but I have had treatment. And in the last 10 years, I've given over, I've talked to some, made some 450 presentations to different jails, prisons, schools, churches, group organizations. I'm slowing down now, but I just feel it's our duty, as long as you're living in here, that you better defend the country and defend what was done there. And some of that's being done today, that kind of treatment of concentration camps.
Mr. Tillman's, a lot of our veterans, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, don't want to talk about what they went through during the war, but you seem to cherish it, and it seems important to you to share your experiences at the Nuremberg War Trials. Why is that?
Because you saw it, and because there's people that say that, like this Iranian president, just a myth. Well, other people can believe those sort of things, and we got to stop it. And this was horrible what went on there, and it can happen again. But it's a saying that the Holocaust was evil, and evil will triumph if good men do nothing. And we should be doing something to for the people that don't realize what went on with 9,000 dying every day in these camps.
So your message to the younger generation, to today's generation, to our military that are deployed all over the world today, is we have to step up and we have to defend those who can't defend themselves.
If you don't talk up, who's gonna? Because I feel it's our responsibility. Ike said it's going to happen if we don't take the responsibility. Get out there now, get every witness and get the testimony, get the pictures taken, and have it ready. And he knew it was coming, that people are going to deny it. And luckily we were able to get at least, this was the first time in history that anybody took people to trial for the things that they'd done in a war. And they'd done the four main things that they're going to hang on. There was 12 out of that 24 that did. And I got to know Joe. Joe Malta was the hangman. We called him Hangman 10. Joe hung 10 of them. And he hung 60 in all. But there were some other hangmen like Dachau to Dachau. They hung more than that.
And you happen to see that hangman about 50 at the 50-year anniversary, didn't you?
No, I wasn't there to see it. I just heard about it. Joe had a lot to say. Whenever he'd get after a trial, we'd go down to the canteen, have a beer, a cognac, or whatnot. And when Joe would show up, he'd draw a crowd, and they'd all want to know how do you do it. And he'd explain those scaffolds that he had where he dropped the bodies down, and he'd even show how to tie the knot.
And Mr. Tillman's, what was life like for you after you finished that assignment in Nuremberg and returned to the United States?
Well, I don't know. I just don't know. I was kind of lost a little bit, but I managed, I think I did anyway, to get straightened out. I got to drinking too much, and I had treatment. And I haven't had a drink now. I had a treatment when I was in the Otter Tail County Jail for my second DWI, and I found out that prayer that got me turned around. And it was, there was a barracks of 2,500 Catholic priests, barracks 26 and 28, and Father Engelmar was in there. I heard a lot of stories about those priests and the good that they did all the while that they were there, and I found that, I found him, he's Marion Hill missionary, and I pray to him. I have a novena that I give out to people that come to want them. I've given over 300 of his novena booklets at sessions that I've been on the last 10 years, and I haven't quit yet.
Mr. Tillman's, any final thoughts for our listeners about the Nuremberg War Trials or Dachau?
Well, I guess I told them already how I feel about it. And good people have to stand up, just like that saying says, that it was, Holocaust was evil. And evil will triumph when good men say nothing.
Mr. Tillmans, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Larry Tillmans, a World War II veteran who served as a typist for the United States Army during the Nuremberg War Trials. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us in the studio is Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Sergeant Nelson, what's in the mailbag today?
Hi, Tom. Well, we have a different letter this week in the mailbag. Last week we had a fantastic thank you letter, and this week we have a different one. This comes to us from Dawn. She says, I spoke with a friend yesterday. Her brother, a Marine who had been over to Iraq, died by suicide a couple of weeks ago. Her son is also a Marine currently serving out west. She is hurting and confused. What can we offer this family? Are there resources?
Wow, what a question. What kind of an answer do you have for Dawn?
Well, I have a good answer for her, Tom. We have, here in Minnesota, we have two survivor outreach service coordinators who work with Gold Star families, and they provide support for group and support groups, and they provide counseling. Every state in the nation actually has these survivor outreach service coordinators, and we're blessed to have two fantastic individuals. And they help families, whatever the case may be, that the service member died, if it was died by suicide in this case, or died while serving their country overseas. These survivor outreach coordinators help them navigate through this very difficult time. And you can find our two coordinators, Gail Springboard and Jonathan Grenewig, if you go to beyondyellowribbon.org/outreach services. And you can also find that under the Family Wellness tab.
Are there any other resources for families and friends navigating through the loss of a loved one?
There are, Tom. Thanks for asking. The vet centers also offer free counseling to families of the fallen, and a really neat national organization is called TAPS. Their website is www.taps.org, and this is a nonprofit organization who has who offers support to the family of those who have suffered a military loss, and they mail resources to them. They have support groups. They can match with another family, so they have a peer mentor if they go through the situation. And I had a wonderful experience 2 years ago. I got to see TAPS in action. They came to Minnesota at one of our Gold Star retreats about 2 years ago. And a Gold Star retreat is a retreat for families who have lost their service member. And it's just such a powerful and moving event. And it provides so much support. And networking, really, for families who are going through a difficult time.
Thank you, Sergeant Nelson.
You're welcome, Tom.
Once again, those resources are at beyondtheyellowribbon.org/survivor-outreach-services or TAPS, TAPS.org. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Before we go, I'd like to mention that the 61st anniversary of the Royal Lao Armed Forces is coming up. They'll be hosting an event March 26th at 4 p.m. at the Cedar Street Armory in St. Paul. These men and women bravely fought alongside our American service members in the secret war during Vietnam. For more information, visit us on Facebook and MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Jody Stauber from the Yellow Ribbon Community of Duluth, World War II veteran Larry Tillmans, Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesotans Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the spiritual health of soldiers in combat and Minnesota's Military Honors Team. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. If you have questions for our mailbag or want to check out the podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, Minnesota Military Radio Hour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at Minnesota Military Radio Hour.com. Thanks for listening.